From the Sky News Centre at 6, the Chancellor's defending spending more than £4 billion so far on Brexit preparations. It's emerged the government standing down no-deal planning following this week's delay to leaving, possibly until Halloween. Meanwhile, Nigel Farage has launched his new Brexit party. Conservative Leave supporter Jacob Rees-Mogg's sister, Anand Ziata, is going to stand for the new group and was asked what her brother thought of that.
Our views on the objective to bring back control to the British people are exactly the same. I don't suppose you always share every view with your siblings, but we think there are different ways of achieving the same ultimate goal.
England rugby bosses say they'll talk to Billy Vunipola, who is now involved in a homophobia row. The players defended a social media post by Israel Folau in which the Australian star said hell awaits gay people. A former county cricketer has been found guilty of raping a woman who was sleeping in his flat. Ex-Worcestershire all-rounder Alex Hepburn will be sentenced at the end of the month. UK nationals who go overseas to join terror groups could now face up to 10 years in jail if they try to return home. The new laws apply in future cases and not to anyone who's yet to go out. It's part of efforts to combat recruitment by jihadi organisations. Security expert Margaret Gilmore says it should make it easier to get convictions, even for people who change their minds.
If you turn up at the border and you say, look, I was brainwashed, I was sent under duress, I didn't want to stay there, I've changed my mind, in the future, that will not count.
A pregnancy club will have to pay a £400,000 fine for illegally sharing the personal information of more than 14 million people. Bounty UK didn't tell them that it also allowed 39 other organisations to see it. And around 110 jobs are going to be lost at retailer LK Bennett. It's being taken over by Rebecca Feng, who runs its Chinese franchises, but the deal will mean over a third of its stores closing. That's the latest. I'm Amelia Cox.
BCFM.
Love Bristol.
Love
BCFM 93.2.
This is Bristol. It's Friday, it's 6 o'clock, and welcome to BCM's BCFM Evens Weekly Politics Show. I'm Tony Gosling. Welcome me, helping me review this week's news is Cabinet Member for Waste, Labour Councillor for St George Central, Steve Pearce, also with us. Due to be the Lib Dem candidate in next year's mayoral elections, that's Mary Page. Labour Party Oxford economist and Irish Republican Martin Summers is here too. After the 7 o'clock news, a $4.3 billion IMF loan to Ecuador is just signed off. Was that the quid pro quo for the new right-wing government ditching Assange? Possibly similar buying of politics and secret bribing of top politicians now being exposed in Malaysia with the $4.5 billion IMDb scandal. And Israeli elections leave Israeli President Netanyahu still in power for a record fifth term, using every trick in the book to stop Palestinians voting. Some asking whether Bibi was waving his magic wand, because the story possibly even overshadowed this week by the US Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's decision to categorise the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps as a terrorist group, just in time to help Bibi win the elections. And a new book on Operation Gladio. We look tonight at the South American part of the operation. It's called Condor, which left tens of thousands opposed to US-installed dictators in South America as disappeared. We hear how most of them ended up as shark food. That's all in the second hour. After 7. On to our news review in a minute, but first, Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from the weatheroutlook.com. Tonight, lows around 5 Celsius and dry this weekend. Highs about 10, sunny intervals tomorrow, and some light cloud on Sunday. Next week, highs around 16, warming up, mainly cloudy with some sunny spells and fleeting showers. Next weekend, that's the 20th and the 21st and the 22nd of April, that's Easter weekend. Highs around 16 and sunny spells, sounds good for Easter. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. So, joining me to review this week's news is also, as well as our cabinet member, Steve Pearce, is Lib Dem candidate for next year's mayoral elections, Mary Page. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the Politics Show.
Hello, Tony. Thank you.
Tell us a bit about yourself. Why do you think you could make a good mayor?
There's a lot of reasons. One is the passion that I bring, but I'm standing on a message of compassion, hope and love. You know, we need to heal some of the rifts in the country at the moment. And we also need to make sure that all of our institutions, including our councils, give good value for money.
But hang on, the Lib Dems were part of the whole austerity programme started in 2010, which has deprived cities like Bristol of so much of their spending. They had to cut. In fact, that's all we've pretty much seen the last decade is cuts, and those are Lib Dem cuts.
I think that there was a note left, wasn't there, by Liam Byrne. Excuse me. Liam Byrne left his note behind saying, there is no money left. And I think it's about time that certain parties took responsibility for their part in it. You know, it took all of us to get into it, and it's going to have to take very different thinking to get out of it.
So you're hoping people have forgotten the Lib Dems' role in the austerity programme then?
I don't think it's about forgetting or remembering or doing anything like that. You know, I mean, I think a little bit more closer to home is a £98,000 payoff to Anna Klonowski. That is, you know, not acceptable in my book. I spoke about it at council. Prior to that, we had £200,000 payoff to another senior executive. And we've also got a consultant being paid at £1,450 per day, which equates to £377,000 of yours and mine, taxpayers' money, being paid per year.
So what is that consultant doing?
I have absolutely no idea. Apparently they were employed to deliver the arena. I'm sorry, can you see the arena? Where is the arena?
Well, okay, Mary. Well, you've given us something interesting to think about there. And Steve, I don't think you'd be surprised if I asked you, who is this consultant and why is someone being paid pro rata something like £350,000 to deliver, so far, nothing?
I'd like to know who that is. I have...
Sorry, have you got a name? Do you know the name?
I guess it's probably unfair to name the specific individual.
Really?
That they,
why?
In the council chamber, they don't.
Our money is paying for this person. Why can't we name them? Is there some sort of,
I think in the council chamber they tend to use the etiquette of that.
We're not the council chamber.
No. Steve.
Okay, you don't want to name them. All right, fair enough. Now, that would help Steve know who they are, if you did. And would you like to whisper them to Steve while we're off
I
here?
Mean...
Would you like to do that? Okay, well, just switch Steve's microphone on for a second and you can whisper to him. Okay, your time's up. Okay, now, I think, Steve, you should know who it is. And we've not betrayed the person's name, but it does sound a lot of money to pay someone for an arena that isn't actually happening.
Well, it does sound a lot of money, but it's not just an arena that that we're trying to deliver in this city. It's a big city, and all of these jobs are big jobs. And... you have to pay the rate to get the job done. And Mary started by talking about severance payments. But in that particular instance, you have to work with the advice that you're given. And when you're given advice, you'd be a fool to not take it. It's what lawyers are there for.
So who's running this council? Is it the Legal Services Department or the elected people?
Well, the elected people run it, but they have to follow advice when it's given. Otherwise, we'd be living in chaos.
I don't think they have to actually follow the advice, do they? They're given the advice and then they can choose...
Yes, you know, they can choose whether
can
or not...
They can choose to step over the cliff and not follow it.
Yes, well, let's not step over the cliff.
I think that's the point about experts, isn't it, really? You know, Michael Gove had that quote about, you know, we've had enough of experts. Actually, no, we haven't. We absolutely need experts, like, for example, on the issue of air quality in the city. We need that expert advice and data in order to understand how to solve the problem. But what we need to do as politicians is have the sense, the sort of probity and goodness of character and the ethics to be able to take that information in and work out what is the right and fair thing to do for the people
Bristol
of Bristol.
The Legal Services Department have been coming in for a lot of flak recently, Steve, haven't they? Over Stoke Lodge, for example, Marvin refusing to release the advice he was given over Stoke Lodge. There was a court case on Tuesday morning over evicting people living in the bear pit, where the case was just finished. Basically, the case was thrown out by the judge, so the legal officers just basically didn't put the paperwork together properly, or they may come back at some point in the future, but that case is now dismissed. Are you sure it's a good idea to be taking these people's advice when it actually comes to testing some things in court? They just conk out, basically. Well, and there's another problem with solicitors, is they sometimes tell you what you want to hear, don't they?
Well, and there's always a case that quite often the question you ask determines the advice that you're given.
Definitely. You know, and the person paying for the advice often has, you know, an interest in getting the advice that they want to hear.
But the problem, and another problem, is that once you go to court, once you're through those courtroom doors, you never know what's going to happen.
Well, and I think that's the issue. Well,
I did see the court papers, and I can tell you, the council didn't have a leg to stand on legally, really. I mean, interestingly, seeing them, I mean, the council doesn't actually appear to own more than about a tenth of the western side of the bear pit. So very difficult, obviously, to evict people if you don't own the land.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, you have the advantage of me there. I've not seen that ownership detail.
Yeah, and it's like the people own Ursa the bear, you know, that we own that. That's a piece of public art. And the mayor seems to even punitively want to get rid of that. And I don't get why, you know, because that is owned by the people of Bristol. And that's what we ought to be protecting as politicians.
Well, some people are looking at a whole situation at the bear pit. I think maybe we try and draw a line under this fairly quickly. But as just gentrification, I mean, we've seen a lot of development in that corner of St. Paul's, Steve, as you know. And the idea is, look, we don't really want people who are living in some of those new developments walking in and out of town and having to put up with homeless people. And what there's a lot of allegations of antisocial behaviour, but that has really increased since the mayor pulled Bear Pit Improvement Group out, and there was a sort of a fairly stable equilibrium-ish. Now they've been pulled out, it's really become a place for... It's a squat, effectively. It's about 20 people living there now, and actually making a fairly good go of it, as was reported by ITV West on Monday.
Yeah, well, I have very little to do with the bear pit. I have to say, I avoid walking through it. And that's on the strength of the reputation of the place.
Do you go through St. Paul's?
I
walk through it, and I'll happily walk through it. And there was a dance party down there the other night, and I would have happily gone to that too.
And I have constituents out in St. George, and they say they think the place is a disgrace and the mayor should shut it down immediately. So a lot of it depends on where you live, what you see, what your perspective is.
Do you have a vision for the place yourself? What do you think should happen there?
What do I think should happen there? I'd love to turn it into an underground station.
is this for real? This underground? Is it going to happen?
Is rapid transit going to happen?
Underground.
Some will be underground. Most of it won't be.
Yeah. Is it going to be as good as the amazing Metro bus?
I've dubbed it the mole transit system. It's putting the people of Bristol in the dark, out of the way, plumbing the depths of the city.
I mean, what's the real solution, do you think, to the city's transport problem, Steve. I mean, a lot of people questioning the underground thing are saying, well, this is just going to take loads of money from China, may never even happen.
Well, one thing's for sure, the public sector won't be able to afford to pay for it. That's for certain. Most infrastructure now has to be at least part financed by the private sector. And if we want to get people out of cars, if we want to fix congestion, if we want to fix air quality, then we need to get people on public transport, and it needs to be fast and efficient public transport. And the roads that we've got, the surface movement potential we've got in and around Bristol is limited. Yeah. So in central Bristol, you're more likely to see underground, but when you get out of Bristol, then you're more likely to see stuff running on the surface.
Most of the public, commuters, etc., look at the council and they say, well, look, council obviously would much rather charge us for coming in and out of the city, which is now on the cards, you know, following this new London emission charge and the congestion charge in London, rather than provide decent public transport that's reliable, so we don't have to use our cars. So well, much rather the council's attitude seems to be stick rather than carrot, doesn't it?
Well, what's needed is carrot and stick, and the problem is that we can't provide good public transport until we've got the income to pay for it. So the delivery of high quality public transport is dependent on paying.
But I'd like you to sort of just vision this and just let your imagination get away with you. You know, the idea that's come forward from the Bristol Cable Car Company actually is much more affordable, is already well implemented and easy to install in a modular system. Anyone who's been to anywhere in the mountains and seen some form of pod cable car system, you can get multiple people through in a fast way. You could have interconnecting system from the station through to the bus station, because whoever heard of a city of not having their bus station and their train station beside each other, and that's us. It also gets you to Cabot Circus. You could then have something, and it actually has a huge tourist benefit, because you've then got people seeing and being able to see all the wonderful sights of the city. You take it across to the harbour side, you take it up to Clifton Heights. I'm not saying that's something that I would promise to deliver. It's something I would promise to investigate, because everything that I'm standing on, everything that I want to do, is backed up by the fact that actually we want to abolish the position of mayor. We're going to run the referendum to get rid of the post and let the people of Bristol decide how they want to be governed.
The people of Bristol already decided, Mary. They decided they want a mayor.
Well, they don't at the moment. The polling we're doing at the moment is showing about a sort of 65% in favour of not having the mayor.
Okay, so when would such a referendum happen then?
In 2022. And also the other thing about the complexity of the of how that system was set up is I myself actually voted to have the Bristol mayoral system, the Bristol city mayor, because that was in 2002. But that was a year before suddenly imposed upon us was a West of England mayoral system. To have two means you have one that is spare. You also have a city council that already, and you know, Steve is an example of a councillor going about doing their job. He may or may not have been one of the 50 councillors in the council chamber that voted for the arena, but 50 of them did one day, and then the very next day our mayor saw fit to overrule that decision to have the arena in the city centre with his one vote and take it away.
Well, we've got a lot of more student accommodation apparently this week, we hear, going up on Temple Island. No bus station, which is the obvious sort of thing to have there, or arena, or something public, which it really served by the railway station, which is obviously immensely important. It come, you know, all the way down to the far end of the West Country, right the way back to London. And yet, when people come out of there, rather than see something like a bus station or maybe an arena or something to do for the public, there's going to be a load of student flats. Now, hang on, I thought we had enough student flats here in Bristol. They're popping up all over the place. In fact, it's one of the only things that is popping up, because we know the students are going to get these loans, and there's definitely money in the landlord's pockets to build these things. And so the only thing, it seems, which is going to be built in the city at the moment is student flats, including on Temple Island.
Universities are the growth industry, it seems, at the moment, and and we have to have somewhere to house the students. If we don't house them in student accommodation, they'll end up taking up family accommodation as essentially HMOs, houses in multiple occupation. And we can't afford to have families priced out of housing by groups of students.
My point is not that we shouldn't be building any student accommodation. It's that this is a strategic hub at Temple Meads, and yet we've decided, oh, I'll tell you what, shrug our shoulders. Well, we can't actually get our act together to build an arena or anything else useful, so let's build student houses.
It will be very convenient for student housing because the university's having a whole campus there, and having the students local there
housing.
Will be very...
To, you know, it would be really convenient for affordable housing for Bristolians. And, you know, out of the hundreds of homes that are destined for that arena site now, I think there's only four affordable homes. That doesn't meet the council's own percentage that you need to deliver. And I just think that's an abysmal aspiration. It's not delivering what we should have for Bristolians. And that is what a mayor system is bringing us.
But what we've got is we've got a great message to tell on housing at the moment. In the 2016 election campaign, Marvin committed to building 2,000 homes, of which 800 would be affordable every year by 2020. And we're ahead of schedule on that. We've got a great story to tell on housing.
You're saying that you are, but I've seen figures that, you know, perhaps contradict that.
We would always like to build more. Of course we would.
Okay, look, before we get too far away from transport, let's also consider the idea of bus franchising, because this has been talked about probably for the last... I have absolutely failed miserably, sorry listeners, to get Tim Bowles to come on this programme despite at least 20 or 30 emails and phone calls and begging him to come on here to discuss what is bus franchising, will you do it? But no, instead he always pops up when something else is happening, like Metro Bus, then suddenly Tim Bowles, you see him, and then he disappears again. I don't know where he lives. He's somewhere under the ground somewhere. And then the same with the announcement this week about the Portishead Railway Line, which in 2 years' time you'll be able to actually hop on a train for very little less than the bus fare and get off somewhere very close to Portishead High Street. And I spoke earlier this week to one of the people who's... I mean, Tim Bowles has been taking the credit for this, but I'm, you know, not a great fan of Tim because he just refuses to come on the radio and discuss anything anymore. And and this chap, Alan Matthews, has been working since 2010 very hard on trying to make sure that this Portishead rail line happens. And I think the credit should go to him rather than to our wonderful... lives under the ground Metro Mayor Tim Bowles. So here's Alan Matthews explaining whereabouts the new station will be in Portishead.
The railway group have been campaigning since the year 2000, so it's now 19 years. And I joined about 8-9 years ago. And at that time, basically, railways were dead. I mean, the government said, no, rails have had their day. It's now down to bus rapid transit. Or bus guided busways, and therefore there was no incentive for local authorities to get involved with opening railway lines. So we were campaigning, sort of like banging that head against a brick wall, really. But the local authority and North Somerset Council suddenly realised if we reopened the railway, it gave the people in Portishead an alternative way of getting out of the town. Because there's only one road in and out, one main road in and out. So they were sort of fairly, you know, well, we ought to try and get the railway open. And then the government, probably 3-4 years ago, changed their attitude and suddenly realised, well, we ought to probably look at reopening railway lines. And the Portishead line is a sort of no-brainer because most of the line is currently a freight line, so it would just need extending 3 mile into Portishead.
So where are these terminals envisioned to be in Portishead?
Well, the initial idea was it to be near the Waitrose store, which was where the original, well, the second station was. But because Keys Avenue, a road, has now cut across the old track bed, the government would not allow level crossings. So the The station has now been moved, so it's now next to Keys Avenue, which is a short walk into the town centre.
So I think that there's the fellow that I think should get most of the credit for the Portishead Railway line. Anna Matthews there from the Portishead Railway Group, and that should be opening in 2 years' time. At least some good news on transport. But what's happening with bus franchising? Do you think there's any chance, Steve, of getting that in the city? I mean, I know transport's not your thing, but and we'll be coming to waste, which is your thing in a minute, but why aren't we doing this? It just seems really obvious. Other cities have had a great success doing it.
I don't know why we're not doing it. I wish we could. I wish we could. I wish that the Metro Mayor would take it on, but he doesn't appear to want to take
but
those
basically
powers.
Means the city like would
he has those powers. He doesn't appear to want to exercise them.
I'd like to thank you for saying that, because you know that's what the public needs and wants, is when a politician agrees with an idea that isn't necessarily put forward by their political party. They need to be honest enough to say, yeah, that's a good idea, I agree with it. And you know, the campaign run by Max Langer, who has been getting together the petition for bus franchising, and it's something that the Lib Dems have been fully behind. You know, it really is a good idea to be able to control what sort of buses you have, what times they run, what routes they run, because that's going to give you a better service, and you can start to use all of the data that the council has to plan the routes better. And that's the sort of thing we need in order to help clean up the air in Bristol and stop as many journeys. I think it's something, you know, there's a huge percentage of people who are coming into the city centre by car, but that's because they haven't got another option of affordable, easy transport that is going to the destinations and making the journeys that they need to make.
And reliable. So Steve, yeah. Your portfolio is waste. Does that include air quality or not?
Yes.
Oh dear, because we have a bit of a problem with air quality, and in fact, so
well,
I say
yes, not really, but I really wish it did. Air quality is an issue, we know that. There's a lot of talk about air quality in Bristol. There's a lot of misinformation about it as well. The improvements that we see to air quality and any air quality zone, the implementation of that hasn't been put back. The date for that is the same as it all as it,
which is,
I can't remember the date off the top of my head. But what we've recognised, what we've identified, is that the first set of modelling that was done clearly showed that it was poor people in Bristol who were going to pay the price of the implementation of air quality.
So like congestion charge, that sort of thing?
Yeah. Any air quality charging zone was going to impact unfairly and disproportionately on poorer people.
Yeah, that's called a regressive tax, isn't it?
It is. And so what we had to do, having identified that, we said, right, we need to look at this again, crunch the numbers again, identify a solution that would deliver the air quality improvements we want at the time that we want it, but without penalising the poorest people in the city. And we can't be having regressive taxation for something like air quality.
Completely accurate.
Okay, Mary, over to you.
The fact that I think some of the data's in terms of who owns cars, there's quite a much lower percentage of car ownership within some of the communities that you're talking about.
So you think poor people
and
own
so,
brand new cars?
No, less car ownership. There's less car ownership at all, because a lot of people who have moved into the city centre areas. And yes, there are communities that would be adversely affected, but that's about how you provide the package to mitigate,
and how you provide.
Well, you could. There's £900 million in the WECA budget that's unallocated for transport planning, housing, etc. And I'm pretty sure that we could have some form of vehicle exchange scheme program brought in if we could only get Tim Bowles to open
now,
up the purse.
That is a lot of money. Steve, I know you were on the Local Enterprise Partnership. Can you just take us through these big organisations, which aren't actually anywhere near as accountable as the City Council is? In fact, we played a clip on here from, I think it was Today in Parliament a few weeks ago, where various MPs were saying, well, why don't you just give this money to City Councils? Why are you giving them to these other bodies like the Local Enterprise Partnership, WECA, people like that? Could you just take us through what is WECA and what is the LEP?
The West of England Combined Authority is the councils that used to be Avon, Cuba, less.
Well, I just explain that acronym.
Less North Somerset.
Cuba.
Councils that used to be Avon.
Okay.
Cuba.
CUBA.
I love it.
There's also Bosnia. Bits of Somerset, not in Avon. All these daft acronyms.
Okay, so WECA, yeah.
So WECA is the area that's governed by the Metro Mayor, by Tim Bowles. North Somerset elected to not come on board at that point. They may do at some point in the future. And the LEP is essentially an organisation of universities and businesses, and they have a budget direct from government that they spend doing things that will benefit the economy, essentially.
Or benefit them, often.
Well, yes, very often, yes.
So, I mean, as less and less money has been allocated to you at the Bristol City Council to spend, so more and more seems to have been allocated to people like WECA and the LEPs, which are much less accountable. So, I mean, isn't this just a way of saying, well, we're actually not really interested in elected people spending money, we'd much rather give it to whatever, heads of universities,
well,
and they can
about,
do it what they
yeah,
want
yeah,
with it.
We talk about devolution, but quite often the devolution isn't real devolution, because WECA is the Metro Mayor. And his cabinet of leaders of the other three authorities. So, yes, he's directly elected, which is a good thing, but it's very difficult for ordinary individual citizens to have any kind of relationship with Tim Bowles.
Well, yeah, even for me to have any kind of relationship with Tim Bowles,
yeah,
he doesn't
absolutely
reply to my emails or my phone calls.
And that's one of the fundamentals about why the Liberal Democrat policy is to ask the people again about whether they're getting value for money from their sort of £1 million that's spent on the mayor, his backroom staff.
Mayor, not the Metro
Bristol
mayor.
Exactly. So that's the Bristol mayor. And if we take out the mayor and we take out his chief of staff, who's paid nearly £100,000, which also is disgraceful. That's doubled in the
to
time of his
to do
office.
Things like don't come on the BCFM politics show.
Absolutely. So
that's
if we
money well spent,
if we
isn't it,
took if we took that out, we could give it back to local communities. My offer would be to put it into community groups, charities, and even to match fund corporate social responsibility budgets of small local businesses, because that's a much better way of distributing the money to people of Bristol, so they decide how their money is spent.
So what roughly are the budgets of the WECA and LEP, Steve? I mean, how much money are they spending? Because it's a lot, isn't it? I mean, what? Bristol has depending on where you look at it, anything between about £1 billion and £350 million a year of our money to spend. Roughly how much do these guys get?
The LEP, I don't know. I don't have those
they
numbers.
They wouldn't tell me. Yeah.
I don't have those numbers. But WECA, essentially, it's £900 million, but it's over 30 years. And it's flat, so it's not indexed with inflation.
Right.
So it's £30 million in the first year of 30, and £30 million in the 30th year of 30, which of course in real terms will be worth a lot less.
Okay, back to waste, because we did start talking about that.
Okay.
I mustn't divert too far from it, but it did come up in Prime Minister's questions this week on Wednesday, which, you know, amongst all the Brexit, sorry to mention the word that you're not allowed to
I missed that.
I know. And it was a Conservative MP that brought it up, if you're talking about the incinerator in Wiltshire.
We certainly are. So we're about to hear about that, and we'll hear from Steve what he makes of this in a minute.
Dr. Andrew Murison. Surplus waste incinerator capacity is taking pressure off efforts to reuse, recycle and reduce waste. Will the government strengthen its bid to host the 2020 UN Climate Change Conference by putting a moratorium on new incinerator gasification and pyrolysis applications, including the one in Westbury in my constituency?
Well, can I thank my honourable friend for raising this issue and for highlighting the fact that we are bidding to host COP26. The issue of incineration, I understand, is a crucial one, particularly for certain local areas. We do want to maximise the amount of waste that is sent to recycling rather than to incineration and landfill. Waste plants play and continue to play an important role in reducing the rubbish sent to landfill. But we do welcome work to drive down waste to landfill further. But if wider policies don't deliver our waste ambitions in the future, including those higher recycling rates, then we will consider the introduction of a tax on the incineration of waste, and this would operate in conjunction with the landfill tax and take into account the possible impact on local authorities.
Well, that was very interesting. In Bristol, we're very much committed to the reuse and recycle agenda. We're reducing the amount of residual waste that goes to landfill. We're reducing that all the time, and there's a new contract that's currently out for we're currently letting the contract at the moment, something that we're doing as a West of England body again, and it's again, it's all good news. The amount that we're sending to landfill is falling. It will fall further. We use waste to energy is a useful thing. Ideally, we'd reuse as much as we possibly could, and our new waste centres in Avonmouth and at Hartcliffe Way will have reuse centres as part of the construction.
I think that Councillor Gary Hopkins would probably quibble over your statement that it's getting better, because I believe that actually recycling rates have fallen under this council compared to how they were under the last Liberal Democrat council in Bristol. And also, I took a trip out the other day.
There is less money,
but the whole point is, you know, the whole point is that you can, no, not because of this Lib Dem administration at all.
Nick Clegg,
No, we've had 5 years of, you know, Conservative government since then. And, you know, and that was in part due to the fact that, you know, Labour sort of put forward an unattractive offer, obviously. So, you know, I think part of the problem is, and I'm really pleased that Steve talked about air quality as being part of waste, because let's face it, emissions are a form of waste product, a byproduct of things that we're doing. And so perhaps it really ought to be part of the waste portfolio. I took a trip around Avonmouth the other day with Ian Robinson, an air quality campaigner, to have a look at those incinerators up there. And I went with Councillor Eleanor Comley from the Green group. Who would want to live with that air quality up there? I mean, that is a massive issue and a massive problem. And the recycling rates, how about thinking things differently and allowing businesses to recycle their stuff for much, much lower costs, so the recycling becomes free and we are only charging for the things that we are really throwing away.
Do you want to answer that one specifically?
No, I didn't really understand that one.
in terms of if we across the board, if we are looking to reduce, reuse and recycle, wouldn't it be a good thing to have a look at the whole sort of waste and recycling offer across the city, look at how we can have public...
Can you just make it short, please? Just a really short question, so a simple one.
So that the businesses, so you could allow businesses to do much more recycling for far less
cost. Without charging
cost.
Them.
Yeah,
okay,
without charging
Steve.
Them.
Or a minimal cost.
For their employees...
For the business waste that can be recycled, that we can actually make.
Okay, if we're charging for business waste, would more be recycled if we didn't?
Would more be recycled if we didn't? Possibly. I'm not sure. I'm not sure anyone's done any numbers on that. I'm not sure anyone's doing it. But people's experience of litter and fly tipping needs to improve and is improving and will improve more. And we're making £1 million investment to tackle litter, fly tipping and graffiti.
So it's the whole plan. I remember this is about 2 years ago. Marvin, the mayor, came up with this idea that you had to go out into your own street and clear up the litter. Is that we managed to move beyond that now?
Well, once upon a time, people used to do that. My mum used to go out and sweep the pavement. I mean, lots of people used to do that. It's something that
people are asking, Steve, a serious question, which is, what are we paying our council tax for if you can't even come along once a week and, you know, with a road sweep or something and sweep the litter up?
Well, most streets get, I think, a fortnightly street sweep now. By investing £1 million in new kit to tackle graffiti, in new, bigger bins, litter bins, that need emptying less often, that releases resource other bins and to sweep streets more frequently.
There is another more obnoxious form of litter, which we won't go into exactly what it is, but it's caused by the closing down of public toilets. And there's been more and more of that appearing around the city now. Sorry to have to ask you about that, but I do have to. What on earth are you able to do about basically human waste, which is appearing more and more on our streets now?
Yes.
I mean, particularly with you know, increasing homelessness.
Yeah.
I'm not laying that at your door.
No.
You know,
no.
You're having to cope with it, aren't you? So
yeah,
what's happening?
Yeah. So that's a function largely of homelessness, which we're trying to tackle as much as we can. Where availability of toilets is concerned, the latest figure I think is over 80 community toilets now, toilets on the community toilet scheme.
Yeah, but
they're not open 24/7, but actually public toilets weren't open 24/7 either. I mean, and this really, I mean, the issue that everyone's complaining about, it's a housing issue.
A community toilet is just basically crossing your fingers, Mary, and asking, hoping that someone is going to let you use their toilet in a shop or something.
Yeah, and yeah. I know, you know, sort of a lot of friends with disabilities have, you know, often have an urgent need to use the toilet, and that embarrassment of having to go in somewhere and beg to go is just not acceptable. And I think it's possibly unfair to sort of blame the homeless on this one. So I don't think you probably meant it quite like that, Steve, for the increase in human excrement around the city. But you know, there is a need in the same way there's a need for bins, and why haven't we got sort of mini recycling sort of sets of bins across the city, so that anyone who's just got casual waste when they've been around the city, and for tourists, why haven't we got recycling bins, and why haven't we got a set of toilets, European style and standard, that people can use?
What about portaloos? You know, where is the problem? What about a portaloo? Now, how much does that doesn't cost the earth, does it?
They're not as cheap as you'd think they'd be.
They do cost
and the earth. and they require more servicing. And again, it's a money thing, and we didn't implement austerity. We we're stuck with carrying the can for that one.
Okay, well, we're going to get off
austerity. But you're spending £377,000 on a consultant per annum. You know, surely some of that money could go towards paying for toilets and recycling.
Especially if this arena never happens. Anyway, what about Brexit? Apparently, Steve, you've got some restrictions about what you're allowed to talk about. And why is that? It's a shame, isn't it?
It is a shame. It is a shame.
I was really looking
forward to coming in tonight because tonight was supposed to be Brexit Day.
Oh, another one, it's going to be Halloween instead, isn't it?
Yes, there'll be another night. One along in a
I
minute.
Noticed, by the way, Channel 4 News last night, I actually watched it live on, 7, and Jacob Rees-Mogg said something about, in his plum voice, I think there might be some symbolism in the Halloween. But watched it on the repeat, and he didn't say it. They edited that out, which I thought was a bit of a strange thing to do, Channel 4 News. Anyhow, so let's have a listen now to Theresa May getting her Halloween Brexit extension, bless her.
Good morning, everybody. I've just met with Donald Tusk, the President of the European Council, where I agreed an extension to the Brexit process to the end of October at the latest. I continue to believe we need to leave the EU with a deal as soon as possible. And vitally, the EU have agreed that the extension can be terminated when the withdrawal agreement has been ratified, which was my key request of my fellow leaders. For example, this means that if we're able to pass a deal in the first 3 weeks of May, we will not have to take part in European elections and will officially leave the EU on Saturday, the 1st of June.
Martin, this extension, Halloween extension, this doesn't look like we're actually going to leave, does it? For a long time, and maybe never.
Well, that's right. I mean, everything is possible here, isn't it? No deal Brexit's still possible. Some kind of soft Brexit is possible. Another referendum's
What's
possible.
What's the point, I suppose, referendum is the question. What is the point of the extension? I mean, we've had 2.5 years, and why do we need another?
Well, I think the feeling in the other European countries is that everybody's trying to avoid a no deal Brexit, apart from a faction in the Tory party that wants a no deal Brexit.
What about the public? I mean,
some of the public want a no deal Brexit, but they're certainly not a majority. And therefore, you've got to actually work out what it is people want. You've got to work out what the EU countries that you're negotiating with, what they want. And I think basically everybody's just agreed to the EU is basically about fudge. So this is another great big lump of fudge. The EU runs on fudge.
Well, the EU wanted us to remain, Mary. It looks like they've got their way again. Another 6 months of staying in the EU. We're going to actually even go through this ritual of having EU elections, it seems.
I mean, I got to, I'll happily admit I voted to remain, and I'm pretty upset about the thought of losing something, a status that I thought was part of my identity. I identified very much as being English, being Kentish, because I'm from the southeast and not from over this part of the world. But I've made Bristol my home, and I love it. But it's that whole sort of thing where I think we have to go back to the people. I really do, because the people made a decision based on evidence that was given to them at the time. Now, we know full well that a lot of that information was untrue.
On both sides?
I would say more so on one side than another,
right. Okay.
Because it's the Electoral Commission has found fraud on the Leave side. It hasn't found fraud on the other side. So, I think that is the thing. We are allowing a criminal act to push us into a decision. And
okay,
I think
so
that means we have lost
referendum.
Control. It's a criminal act that has been proved as fraud. And that is not right. We are then saying that is okay. Money can buy votes. Well, I'm sorry.
But actually, more money was spent on the Remain
campaign,
wasn't it?
It's not good enough.
Ultimately, and the government actually also campaigned for Remain. Are you allowed to even say whether you think that there should be a second referendum, Steve? Are you allowed to say that or not?
Well, I probably shouldn't talk about that. I think the real scandal of this isn't whether we voted leave or whether we voted remain. I think the real scandal is that Parliament asked the people to express an opinion and promised to act upon it, and then Parliament has failed to do precisely that. Now, when we were all out campaigning one way or the other for leave or remain, spoke to a lot of people on the doorstep, and the numbers of people that voted were clear. People voted in that referendum in larger numbers than they'd ever voted before.
Well, but there were lots. True. I mean, let's just get it clear. It was the 1992 election with John Major was the last time so many people came out to vote. Yeah. So people had been losing interest in voting.
Yes.
Suddenly they came out.
People came out. We had people come out who'd not voted. Some people had never voted before, and a lot of people hadn't voted for a very long time. And the reason for that was because they were of the opinion that voting didn't matter because the government would do what they wanted.
Well, you may be right there. Now, I want you to listen now for some of your who these people are, because this was put together by something called Change Britain, which I found quite shocking, really. David Cameron, Nick Clegg, George Osborne, Peter Mandelson, John May, Jeremy Corbyn, Sadiq Khan, Philip Hammond, Keir Starmer, Hillary Benn, Chuka Ramunna, Justin Greening, John McDonald, Yvette Cooper, Oliver Letwin, and of course Theresa May, back in two and a half years ago, in 2016.
You, the British people, will decide.
This is a once-in-a-generation vote.
This is the once-in-a-lifetime decision.
This is a decision, a once-and-for-all decision. It's not. We will not be taking a decision like this again in our lifetime.
There won't be another referendum on Europe. This is it.
This is a one-off choice between staying in or leaving completely.
If we as a country decide to quit, then we're out for good. There's no going back.
There's no second vote.
There will be no second referendum.
No, I don't think we need a second referendum.
The referendum is clear and has to be accepted, and we can't have a rerun of the question that was put to the country.
I say that with all the conviction and all the sincerity I have. It's so important, this decision.
If we vote to leave, then we will leave.
If people vote to leave, we leave.
You vote to leave, we're out. That's it, we're going.
Whatever the result is, we have to respect it.
We respect the result of this referendum.
And Parliament should respect that referendum result. We've said that all the way through.
Whatever the British people decide, we work together constructively to make that happen.
I don't think it would be right for Parliament to try and unravel the decision that the public have made.
The British Parliament should deliver what is required of that decision of the British people.
I am not going to waste time, precious time, resisting Brexit from happening.
We will be March 2019.
We'd be out of the single market.
We're leaving the single market.
Right.
We're leaving the customs union.
In March 2019, we will cease to be full members of the single market and the customs union.
You have 2 years to negotiate. At the end of those 2 years, you are out and you have to operate under World Trade Organization rules.
No deal will be better than a bad deal.
Yes, you said that repeatedly.
Yes.
And it will be the final decision.
And if anybody's in any doubt, we are going to leave the European Union on the 29th of March 2019.
Well, I think a fantastic compilation. Well done, Change Britain, there, just to show us what liars our politicians are. Not just one, but all of them. All of them are liars. I think every single one, including Nick Clegg. So let's have a listen now to someone who sort of represents, to a certain extent, that point of view, which is Jacob Rees-Mogg talking on Channel 4 News last night, before we hear from our guests here again.
What now? Well, it's not in the Prime Minister's hands particularly. It's what is negotiated between her advisers and the Labour Party to see what they can get through. I think that the Prime Minister's decided it's better to negotiate with the Socialists than it is with her own party.
But you're political realist enough, and indeed in the way in which you answered that, to know that that is not going to come to anything.
The mood music to the Prime Minister's statement was more positive than you might have expected, but you're quite right, it's hard to see what that will come to. It's difficult for both parties. Does Jeremy Corbyn really want to dig Theresa May out of a hole? Are there members of the Cabinet who might resign at the prospect of customs union? So it's certainly not easy. So the question is, what is this 6 months for? And there I don't really have an answer.
The Conservative Party is going to be known for having, yes, triggered Brexit, had the referendum, and then left it 2.5 years before a minority government, effectively, consulted the opposition to see how on earth they get on. I mean, this is irrecoverable.
I think you're asking the wrong person. I'm not trying to defend the actions of the government, because I think the government has made a pig's ear out of this. It has negotiated poorly. It accepted the EU's structure of the discussions, say that it got all its points in first and our points came later. It agreed to pay £39 billion without the prospect of a future trade agreement buttoned up. The process has been very badly handled. In the Prime Minister's own words, it seems that nothing has really changed. And it's quite odd, this extension, because it doesn't change any of the arithmetic in the House of Commons. It doesn't open up the withdrawal agreement. The EU has said it won't do that. It doesn't change the maths around the political declaration or getting the withdrawal agreement bill through Parliament. So what does it do? Well, I think from a Conservative point of view, it will lead to us not having our most successful election night ever on the 23rd of May.
You think there will be an election?
No, I think it would be very hard to avoid. I'd be very surprised if a deal were done and dusted by the 23rd of May. That will be an opportunity for people to protest against this whole process, and I think it will be a plague on all your houses.
Martin, the people who are going to win these European elections, almost certainly Nigel Farage's new party, aren't they?
No, not at all. What's interesting about it, it's under a D'Hondt system, it's PR, and it's effectively a referendum, but not a referendum. And that's why we've had the extension, so that, we will fight the European election. Of course, the super Brexiteers won't participate in the election because they won't participate in the European election. That's their stupidity if they don't. Because in actual fact, the opinion polls show that Remain parties, including the parts of the Labour Party, are likely to do quite well. And we'll actually see what the majority is. And of course, once you're the minority, you're out of the game.
Yeah, and I think that's my problem with it. Most of the people speaking in the campaign so far have been white male millionaires, and that makes my blood boil. I'm an ordinary person from an ordinary background, and, you know, that's why I'm getting into politics, to represent women and men like me across Bristol, because if I hadn't taken a second opinion in my medical health history and I hadn't said, no, I don't accept the first vote, the first advice I was given, I wouldn't be alive today. I was diagnosed with breast cancer 20 years ago. They told me to take one course of treatment. I actually had to walk in there, say, on the day I was due for that treatment, and I didn't take it. I said, I want to see another consultant because I think there is better advice and better information out there. And I think we are failing Bristolians if we do not say, you were lied to, you were given false information by white male millionaires who stand to make millions because they are shorting the pound and betting on the foreign exchange markets in order to make money out of this mess that is Brexit.
Well, I think it's wonderful you talking about medical diagnosis, because I think there's a lot of that out there, and you know, obviously pays to get second opinions if you've got any doubts whatsoever. I met up with a chap last weekend, just out of the blue, kind of coincidental meeting, and he'd been misdiagnosed with cancer and gone through a whole load of treatment for chemotherapy, only to find that actually original samples they looked at, and he didn't have cancer in the first place. So he crawled out of a hospital and saying, look, you're going to kill me if this carries on. And then he went to a GP who was also a naturopath, and he's absolutely fine now, and so he feels like he's got a whole new lease of life. You allowed to say anything at all about the whole thing of having an extension to Brexit, Steve?
I think that the... It's not government. Parliament hasn't covered itself in glory here. But regardless of what the particular issue is, and the issue is membership of the European Union, when you have a Parliament that is so out of alignment with the electorate, which is where we are, when you have that situation... Actually, that is what led to the Brexit vote in the first place, because people felt they weren't being listened to.
Some people felt they weren't being listened to. It was virtually a 50-50
time now
split,
for the
and it was
US,
advisory.
Sorry to stop you, Mary. Time for the US-owned Comcast News at 7 now, thanks to our guests, Cabinet Member for Waste, Labour Councillor for St George Central, Steve Pearce, and also Lib Dem candidate, next year's mayoral elections, Mary Page, joins after the news.
And on your mobile... BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour, live from the Sky News Centre.